Many Australians have experienced online abuse, sadly. But now there's another option to address it. The eSafety Commissioner's powers have been made stronger via this new Online Safety Act. The eSafety Commissioner, Julie Inman-Grant, is here to tell us about it. Commissioner, welcome.
Thank you for having me, Hilary.
It's a pleasure. How widespread is online abuse in Australia? Is it just something you have to expect if you use online platforms, or is it more targeted?
Well, it's a shame that we even have to have this conversation. And unfortunately, it is very commonplace and actually became more common and more vile and targeted over the COVID period. So just to give you some context, we're very proud to have served as the world's first online safety regulator since 2015. When we were established, we were set up as the Children's eSafety Commissioner. And I think the government at the time decided to move gingerly. This was actually in the wake of the tragic suicide of Charlotte Dawson, who was mercilessly trolled on Twitter eventually took her own life. And that started a petition that went to government saying that we as the government should not stand for online bullying anymore. And what the government decided to do at the time, Malcolm Turnbull was the ICT minister, and Paul Fletcher, who's the current ICT minister, was the parliamentary secretary, was to start gingerly by focusing on youth-based cyberbullying and pulling in powers around online content, illegal content, particularly child sexual abuse material, as a starting point. And we've evolved quite some way. We've added additional schemes, including a very successful image-based abuse scheme for those who have experienced a non-consensual sharing of intimate images in videos, an abhorrent violent content scheme, which came into force after the Christchurch atrocities were live streamed. And then we started to see in 2017, once we were rebranded the eSafety Commissioner, that we were just deluged with reports from adults seeking informal support for adult cyber abuse. But until Sunday, we didn't have any formal powers to be able to help them.
Well, let's drill down a little bit more into some of those different categories that you mentioned, image-based abuse, bullying involving children. But let's start with adult cyber abuse. What's the definition? Because it's quite a high bar, isn't it?
It is a very high bar. And again, I think it was deliberately set high because this is, I don't even want to say it's a bold social experiment, because we've learned a lot through the past 7 years in operating the youth-based cyberbullying scheme and also dealing with informal adult abuse. But it's set deliberately high, so it is not seen as a broad censorship tool and is really just targeting that kind of targeted content that is meant to cause serious harm. So we will have to have a two-prong objective test. We will need to prove, I should step back and just say, first of all, we're not going out there and proactively monitoring the internet for trolling or online abuse. This is a complaints-based scheme. And, we're not resourced to tackle on the entire internet or go to war with it. And it is primarily the platform's responsibility to maintain the safety for their users and to enforce the policies that they have in place. Now, that doesn't always happen. Sometimes context is missed. And really, we're set up as a safety net when things fall through the cracks.
In terms of that definition, though, if I could just bring us back, I'm just aware we've got very limited time and there's such a lot to talk about here. That definition of adult cyber abuse, for example, name calling and character attacks won't be caught within that net. So you could call someone a pedophile or say, I hope you get bashed, and that would not trigger the eSafety Commission's powers. How useful is that? If one person could say that's a menacing or malicious comment and another could say, no, it's just a strongly expressed opinion.
Yeah. So under the law, to reach the threshold, the abuse must be both intended to cause serious harm and be menacing, harassing, and offensive in all of the circumstances. And the serious harm could include material which sets out realistic threats, like not that I hope you jump off a bridge, I'm going to push you off a bridge, but will place people in real danger, is excessively malicious or is unrelenting. And if the matter does not meet the threshold, we'll still be able to offer support, information, advice, referral to mental health agencies, to legal services, and the like. It is very high, and we're trying to set expectations that this won't cover defamation or character assassination. In fact, there's a separate defamation bill and significant defamation reform that's been happening across the states and across the Commonwealth for some time now. But, you know, defamation is a tort. You have to prove truth or falsity. There is a reason that it takes months and months for some of this litigation to go through. So it's really meant to target that language that falls squarely into the lane of serious cyber abuse. And I have to say, it's meant, this kind of abuse is meant to silence people. And those who are of diverse ethnicities, genders, sexuality, ability are disproportionately targeted vis-a-vis, sorry, but your typical white male.
Well, and there has been some concern from various ethnic and religious groups that it doesn't deal with abuse targeted towards groups. You can only access the complaints mechanism as an individual. Is that a flaw, do you think?
Well, I think, you know, there's often comparisons to the German NetDG law, the French law, hate speech law, which was actually struck down by the court. You know, countries like Germany and France have a very long history in dealing with these issues and have a framework. I guess, you know, to the extent that I know I'm never going to make everyone happy, some people will think I have too many powers and some people will think I don't have enough. I'm just not sure how you would go about taking down content or moderating content at scale. Certainly there is vicarious trauma that can happen, and we don't want to see racism, homophobia, or misogyny normalized online. And that's what really concerns me. But we're going to, again, start gingerly. We're going to test these powers. You know, people at the individual level, you know, we call them victim survivors for a reason, because they experience the most profound physical, emotional, and mental trauma as a result of this online abuse. But we of course know that it can affect you know, entire populations as well.
We're speaking with Julie Inman Grant, who's the eSafety Commissioner, and wielding brand new powers as of this Sunday to order online platforms to take down serious abusive content or risk fines of over $500,000. Pretty scary if they are going to be effective. I'd love to hear from you too. If you've experienced online abuse, would this new complaints process have helped you? Would it have made a difference, the new Online Safety Act, where you make a complaint to the eSafety Commissioner and they act on your behalf to ask that company to take it down? Julie, the example of the writer Catherine Devaney springs to mind. She posted some comments about Anzac Day on social media in 2018 and just got an avalanche of vile threats, rape threats, death threats. People posted her home address online and people went to her house. And obviously the eSafety Commission acknowledges that the police are going to still be a part of the response to that kind of episode. But how could the new powers of the eSafety Commission help in a situation like that? Would merely getting those hateful comments removed do any good, given that that address has been widely shared, for example?
Right. Well, that is a practice known as doxing, and that would certainly be covered under the Online Safety Act. But of course, we always triage any of these types of reports. And if we felt that a person was in serious physical danger, we would always encourage them to go to their state or territory police to have that physical protection. And of course, we have MOUs with the AFP and all state and territory law enforcement agencies. So referral is something we do on a regular basis. But yeah, there is some really, really scary online hate, online trolling, online abuse that can spill over into real world harm. And we're very alive to that. And so many conversations we've been having with the platforms has been really around You know, sometimes we'll be asked, oh, can you prove that harm is going to happen to someone? We shouldn't have to wait for something to happen to a person. We've seen, you know, history has certainly shown through the Capitol riots. You know, there was even a murder of a woman and a family in the UK, and the perpetrator was part of the incel movement, and you know, this was driven by misogyny and hatred for women. So we know that this happens. So we need to find a way to tackle this. You know, at, I guess at the source, but over time at scale.
Well, and that issue with people's home addresses being posted kind of has parallels to the image-based abuse issue, doesn't it? In that, you know, those images and that information can run around the world before the Safety Commission has time to get its boots on. Will the new powers make much of a difference in things like image-based abuse, where you're ordering people to take things down that have probably already been widely shared?
Yeah, I think one of the benefits of having this set of graduated civil enforcement powers is that we can move so much more quickly than, say, the court system, and in many cases in law enforcement. And in the vast majority of cases, when people come to us, they just want the content taken down. And so in 85% of all of the thousands of cases we've taken thus far with image-based abuse, we have been successful in getting those images taken down. You know, we have some people who come to us with up to 400 URLs. So if you have a really dedicated perpetrator who's trying to cause a lot of trauma, damage, and humiliation, they'll go to that extent. We at eSafety also looked at, we sought to take down every single piece of that content, and we've had multiple people who've come back to us a number of times because, you know, just because you take something off the internet once doesn't mean it's not going to reappear. But we also have graduated powers that we've used, things like remedial actions, where we can compel people to do things like remove all of the images or videos of a person that they've committed image-based abuse against from their iCloud accounts, for instance. And then we will have powers to find both perpetrators and platforms and to name and shame them if they fail to take down or to respond to a removal notice.
Julie Inman-Grant is our guest today. She's the eSafety Commissioner, and the Commission has new powers under the Online Safety Act, which came into effect a couple of days ago. I'd be really interested to hear from you too, your experience with online abuse. Would this new complaints process have helped you when you were going through that? Would it have made a difference? Tell us why or how or why not. Julie, here's a question from text from Sally. She says the defamation proposals, this is a separate thing. There's legislation being considered to limit people making defamatory comments online, which I understand is different to the Online Safety Act, which deals with incitement of violence and abuse. The defamation proposals, says Sally, have been criticised as being useful for those who can afford to take action, legal action. Is this content legislation going to assist people if they don't have resources?
Right. I mean, again, this is legislation that was introduced and is being considered. In fact, there's an open comment period by the Attorney General's department. And, you know, this is in response to both the Voehler decision of the court, but also a product of lots of deliberation with the states and territories. You know, this is, as I said at the beginning, defamation law does often require lengthy legal battles. So there is definitely an access to justice issue if you can't afford this kind of litigation. Now, my understanding is, you know, this legislation is trying to seek to streamline and make it easier for people, everyday Australians, to make defamation claims that happen on social media. But I think there's still a lot more deliberation that needs to happen on those bills. I guess what I can say about all of eSafety's powers is that these are free and available to all Australians who are experiencing online abuse. And so even if we aren't successful in being able to take down your removal of content, we have a real focus. One of our values is delivering compassionate citizen service. So it is helping people through, helping them manage, help them teaching them how to use conversation controls, and referring them to any other sources of help that will help them with legal issues or you know, even adjust to the trauma that we know online harms can cause people.
Well, and conversely, Julie, some people are saying, look, it's weird that if an anonymous troll defames you under the legislation being considered, you could sue them or the social media platform. If they incite violence against you, you can't sue them. Why is that difference in approach, do you think?
I'm not sure where that came from. I imagine you can sue someone if they incite violence against you. And in, of course, inciting violence is an element of the adult cyber abuse scheme. So, you know, real threats of harm can be very menacing and harassing. Of course, online abuse is designed to silence voices. So I spent a couple of years at Twitter, and I remember, you know, saying to my leadership, you know, the First Amendment doesn't exist everywhere. It is an American construct. And unbridled freedom of speech, you know, that's not how the First Amendment was designed either. You know, if you allow totally unbridled freedom of speech, which falls into the realm of abuse and harm, that's effectively silencing voices. And unfortunately, Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander voices, female voices, those who identify as LGBTQI, and those with disabilities are three times more likely to experience targeted abuse than you know, the other genders and ethnicities.
Yeah, our listeners are really engaged with this discussion, Julie Inman-Grant. Julie's the eSafety Commissioner, talking about the new Online Safety Act and the new powers it confers on the Commission. Peter from Western Creek says, what is the resourcing involved in the new powers legislated? He says compliance and education on online abuse and eSafety needs more than legislation to be effective. And Julie, I remember you saying before, even before this act came into effect, you were deluged with reports of online abuse. Will you be able to cope if people come to you with complaints?
Well, absolutely. I mean, I think it's a very astute question. And, you know, one of the things, one of the three strategic pillars that really underpin all of the work that we do are around protection through the regulatory schemes, prevention in the first instance, and what I call proactive change, which is, you know, really minimizing the threat surface for the future. So prevention is pretty obvious. We want to arm our citizens with the skills and strategies that they need to be able to better protect themselves online, know how to anticipate risk and mitigate those risks. So we spend a lot of time doing foundational research and then creating evidence-based resources and programs to help different Australian communities. The protection, of course, does come about through the regulatory schemes. We have been resourced. We've just hired a full new adult cyber abuse scheme. We've got six new investigators. We've got a contingent of 40 investigators, and we have something called a surge scheme that's set up. So if we're deluged in one area, say adult cyber abuse, then we pull people from the cyberbullying investigators or the image-based abuse investigators to be able to tackle that, because that rapid response and turning things around in a short period of time and making contact with the victim survivors is really important. But the proactive change piece is really important too, because we really need to be more actively shaping the future. And one of these provisions is called safety by design. Now, I brought this to Microsoft when I spent 17 years there, well over 10 years ago. And the whole premise is, just like car manufacturers 50 years ago were told to embed seatbelts into their cars because it reduced traffic fatalities, we need platforms doing the same thing. Now, they've been largely unregulated throughout their life cycle, and certainly for online harms around the world. So they have the tools, they have the intellectual capability, they just need the leadership and the vision to invest in understanding online safety risks and then mitigating them before the harm has been done. So safety by design. Yep.
Just very, very quickly, I know we have to finish up in a minute, Julie. Does this apply to overseas-based platforms? Will you be able to reach them?
almost exclusively overseas platforms that we've been dealing with, and we have had success. And in fact, the Online Safety Act strengthens our extraterritorial reach by basically saying that the content, particularly the illegal content, doesn't need to be hosted from or shared from Australia. It's wherever it is hosted.
That's really interesting to know. Julie, thank you so much for your time this morning on Life Matters.
Thank you.
Julie Inman-Grant is the eSafety Commissioner. New powers have come into effect under the Online Safety Act for the eSafety Commission. And we will pop a link up to the complaints form on our website. It would be fascinating to see how many complaints go into the Commission in coming months.